Columbia, a Sony Pictures Entertainment Company. Revolution Studios. Red Om Films. Revolution Studios presents a Red Om Films production. Mona Lisa Smile. A hand secures paper in a typewriter. Then the fingers type.
All her life she had wanted to teach at Wellesley College. So when a position opened in the art history department, she pursued it single-mindedly until she was hired.
A young woman with dark red hair sits on a train.
It was whispered that Catherine Watson, a first-year teacher from Oakland State, made up in brains what she lacked in pedigree.
Catherine holds a slide of a painting up to the window. Later, the train comes to a stop and she gets off.
Which was why this bohemian from California was on her way to the most conservative college in the nation.
Excuse me, please.
Oh, sorry.
She makes her way off the crowded station and approaches a porter.
Excuse me, the bus?
Keep walking, ma'am.
Thank you.
But Catherine Watson didn't come to Wellesley to fit in. She came to Wellesley because she wanted to make a difference.
My favorite Italian professor. Nice summer.
Terrific, thanks. Who's that over there?
Where? Oh, Catherine Watson, new teacher, art history. Dying to meet her.
The teachers, wearing black robes and mortarboards, all make their way across the college grounds, along with the students. Fall 1953. They hid inside a church where the teachers stand in a line at the front. The Italian professor catches Catherine's eye and smiles, but she quickly looks away without returning the gesture. Outside, a crowd of female students make their way quickly towards the main doors. They move aside to let a blonde girl get to the front, and she adjusts her hair and hat, then takes a wooden hammer from a box and knocks on the door.
Who knocks at the door of learning?
I am every woman.
What do you seek?
To awaken my spirit through hard work and dedicate my life to knowledge.
Then you are welcome. All women who seek to follow you can enter here. I now declare the academic year begun.
The students make their way in, and up in the tower, a bell tolls. A woman's leading Catherine down a corridor filled with girls.
Shame you didn't come yesterday. It's so quiet before the girls arrive.
They enter a large bedroom.
Just a few rules. No holes in the walls. No pets. No loud noises. No radio or hi-fi after 8 on weekdays, 10 on weekends. No hot plates and no male visitors. Anything wrong?
I don't think I can go a year without a hot plate.
Catherine carries her suitcase up to her house.
Don't you just love chintz? And look.
She holds a pillow against some pictures.
They match. Sweet, right? Your room's here. My room is just across the way, and Amanda Armstrong's down the other end.
You grew up here?
My whole life. You'll meet my parents. Well, they come to visit.
They visit?
Regularly.
Catherine doesn't look impressed.
What do you teach?
Speech, elocution, and poise. Dinners are communal, so I'll handle that. But breakfast and lunch are on your own. So, we each get our own shelf. I'll make your label this evening. I don't need to tell you that everything on our individual shelves is sacrosanct. I just knew when we met we'd be instant friends.
A light, airy corridor at the college. The students are rushing to class and push absent-mindedly past Catherine, who's standing by the door looking nervous. Another teacher approaches her.
Be careful. They can smell fear.
Catherine smiles and nods, then enters the lecture hall, which is about half full. She walks across the front and places her bags down, but a girl picks up the two cases of slides and carries them away up the steps to the projector.
Good morning. Thank you. This is History of Art 100. We'll be following Dr. Staunton's syllabus. Any questions so far?
Your name?
Why don't you go first?
Connie Baker.
Catherine Watson, nice to meet you.
Dr. Watson, I presume.
Not yet. And you are?
Giselle Levy.
Giselle. If someone could get the...
Susan Delacourt.
Thank you, Susan Delacourt.
Susan, the blonde girl, switches off the lights.
From the beginning, man has always had the impulse to create art. Can anyone tell me what this is?
Wounded bison, Altamira, Spain, about 15,000 BC. Joan Brandwin.
Very good, Joan. Despite the age of these paintings, they are technically very sophisticated.
Because of the shading and the thickness of the lines as it moves over the hump of the bison. Is that right?
Yes, that's exactly right. Next slide. This one you are probably less familiar with. It was discovered by archaeologists in
1879, Lascaux, France, dates back to 10,000 BC, singled out because of the flowing lines depicting the movement of the animal.
Impressive name.
Herd of horses.
I meant yours.
We call her Flicka.
Elizabeth Warren. They call me Betty.
Very good. Betty is also correct. Just because something is ancient doesn't mean that it is primitive. For example, next slide, please.
Mice Regis and his queen, 2470 BC. It's a funerary statue of the pharaoh and his queen, originally intended to preserve the pharaoh's ka, soul.
Catherine smiles nervously.
Have any of you taken art history before?
No. No.
Let's go on, slide.
Seated scribe, Egypt, 2400 BC.
Peasant couple plowing, 16th century BC, Egypt. Snake goddess, Minoan, 1600 BC. Corridor fresco, Minoan, 1600 BC. Funeral mass, Mycenaean, 1200.
The screen goes blank as they reach the end of the slides. The students look impassive, apart from Connie, who's smirking, and Giselle, who looks bored.
Someone please get...
Susan turns the lights back on and goes to sit down again, smiling.
Thank you. By a show of hands only, how many of you have read the entire text?
They all put their hands up.
And the suggested supplements.
Long way from Oakland State.
Well, you girls do prepare.
If you've nothing else for us, we could go to independent study.
They get up and start leaving. Catherine tries to smile as they pass her. A middle-aged man in a brown suit is sitting on the far side of the room, watching. He somberly takes off his glasses, stands up, and makes his way down to the floor. He joins the throng of girls going out with a regretful look back at Catherine, which she notices. She's now waiting outside an office.
I was in California once. How do you get any work done with all that sunshine?
We tan in class.
Really?
No.
You know, not everybody wanted you. I'm not naming any names. These jobs usually go quickly. Ex-students, friends of, you know, the right people. But the person they wanted took a job at Brown, and no one else was available, so here you are. You can go in now. Good luck.
Catherine sits at the end of a long, polished table.
Your first class left a lot to be desired, Miss Watson, and I'm curious about the subject of your dissertation. You suggest Picasso will do for the 20th century what Michelangelo did for the Renaissance, unquote.
In terms of influencing movements.
So, these canvases that they're turning out these days with paint dripped and splotched on them, they're as worthy of our attention as Michelangelo's Sistine Chapel?
I'm not comparing them.
Have you ever seen the Sistine Chapel, Miss Watson? Actually stood there?
I've never been to Europe. I can assure all of you this is the place I want to be more than anything.
Better discipline next class, Miss Watson.
Catherine holds the phone to her ear.
Hello.
It's me.
Hey.
Colette from Catherine Watson. Will you accept?
Yeah, sure. Of course I will. Hey, is everything okay?
Yeah.
Tough, huh?
Mm-hmm. Well, how are the classes?
Snobs, right? I hate to say I told you so.
You don't have to.
She's at home, and the landlady, Nancy, walks down the stairs.
I can't really talk right now. All right.
She hangs the phone up.
So, you got a fella? He's there. I'm here. Long distance torture. I know. Come on in, sit down.
They both sit on the floral sofa.
When Lenny left for the South Pacific, it nearly broke my heart. We wrote every day until... He was a great man. I'm sorry. Oh, it was 100 years ago. I'm babbling. Oh, I love Lucy, even if she is a communist.
The only thing red about Lucy is her hair. Even that's fake. Desi said it. Winchell wrote it. Amanda Armstrong, I see you survived.
Catherine Watson, just barely. Oh, good, you've met. Catherine's taken the third bedroom. How about a little dinner before What's My Line?
How about a little drink?
In the kitchen.
Her companion died in May.
Companion?
You know, companion. Josephine Burns. Taught biology here for 30 years.
They all sit at the table to eat.
You'll love it here, Catherine. You'll see.
I already do. I honestly, it's beautiful. It's perfect, really.
Oh, don't fool yourself. They have claws underneath their white gloves.
Who?
The alumni, their offspring, the faculty, you name it. Watch out for yourself. Too much independence frightens them.
Will you please stop?
Oh, word of advice. Don't let those girls know that they got to you.
They didn't.
Good for you. You almost convinced me.
Catherine's reading Joan Brandwin's college file. She looks at another girl's, then puts the folder down and stares thoughtfully ahead. At the next lecture, She shows a slide which looks like an abstract painting of a butchered animal. The students all turn anxiously to their textbooks.
What is that?
You tell me. Carcass by Soutine, 1925.
It's not on the syllabus.
No, it's not. Is it any good? Come on, ladies. There's no wrong answer. There's also no textbook telling you what to think. It's not that easy, is it?
All right, no. It's not good. In fact, I wouldn't even call it art. It's grotesque.
Is there a rule against art being grotesque?
I think there's something aggressive about it. And erotic.
To you, everything is erotic.
Everything is erotic.
Girls.
Aren't there standards?
Of course there are. Otherwise, a tacky velvet painting could be equated to a Rembrandt.
Hey, my Uncle Freddy has two tacky velvet paintings. He loves those clowns.
There are standards, technique, composition, color, even subject. So if you're suggesting that rotted side of meat is art, much less good art, then what are we going to learn?
Just that. You have outlined our new syllabus, Betty. Thank you. What is art? What makes it good or bad, and who decides? Next slide, please. 25 years ago, someone thought this was brilliant.
I can see that.
Who?
My mother. I painted it for her birthday. Next slide. This is my mom. Is it art?
It's a snapshot.
If I told you Ansel Adams had taken it, would that make a difference?
Art isn't art until someone says it is.
It's art.
The right people?
Who are they?
Betty Warren. We're so lucky we have one of them right here. Thank you.
Could you go back to the soutine, please? Just look at it again. Look beyond the paint. Let us try to open our minds to a new idea. All right, back to chapter 3. Has anyone read it?
All hands go up. In the girls' common room.
When your courses are set and a dreamboat you've met, have a real cigarette. Have a Camel. I've got my courses. I've got my Camel cigarette. Where the hell is my dreamboat? Giselle, where's my dreamboat?
What, Betty's cousin isn't good enough for you?
I haven't met him yet.
Don't encourage her. He's only escorting Connie as a favor.
Whoa.
Why are you like this?
I didn't mean that. I'm just under so much pressure with the wedding. Do you realize November 2nd is 3 weeks from now?
Oh, honey.
Don't have it.
Don't come.
Here. I'm working on table seating now, so I can just erase your name.
Can I see it?
No. Let me just look at it.
I can't look at it just for a second. See where Bill Dunbar is sitting.
No, she doesn't. That is over, right? Right, Giselle, right?
Oh, damn it.
After playfully kissing Connie, Giselle goes to the mirror and looks at herself.
Do I look a little bit like her?
Like who?
Catherine Watson.
You mean crap is art?
I think she's fabulous.
No man wanted her.
She isn't dead.
She's at least 30. Oh, no, no. I guess she never wanted children.
For your information, Catherine Watson had to take this job to escape from California.
Please.
She had a torrid affair with a Hollywood movie star. She came here to get away.
That's ridiculous.
Who was it?
I don't know.
Who was it, Giselle?
Don't be a pimple! Don't tell me!
You. It's ridiculous.
No, it's not. You know something. Tell me.
It's William Holden.
Fantastic.
I know.
Who is it?
William Holden.
A car pulls up outside a large gate as it's being closed. Joan jumps out and runs through them.
I know, I'm late. I'm abject pleading apologies. Forgiveness.
Is she giving you any trouble? These girls can't come back on time. You know what I say? I say lock them out. Lock them out.
Come on. We're going to lock the door. Out.
Oh, bedtime, baby. Bedtime. Let's go. Bedtime.
Ladies.
Hey, Betty.
Women like Katherine Watson don't get married because they choose not to get married.
No woman chooses to have a life without a home. Unless she's sleeping with her Italian professor.
You are so critical.
I am not.
Of course you are. You're your mother's daughter. It's a classic Electra complex. I don't blame you, I mean. Who wouldn't want to murder your mother? Hey, how's the Harvard sweetheart?
Divine.
Got an extra ciggy?
You do his homework?
Of course.
Want to do mine?
No.
Connie takes something out of Giselle's bag.
This isn't what I think it is. Is it?
It's a thin, round container.
Where'd you get it? From the school nurse.
It's against the law.
Oh, honey. It's a girl's best friend.
A certain kind of girl.
Meet the last virgin bride.
Spencer is a gentleman.
And even gentlemen have dicks.
Giselle takes the cap out, and they all look at it.
Maybe I'll get one.
What, a deck?
Don't be stupid, Connie.
Connie's smile freezes.
Someone somewhere someday might be interested. Just in case. Just in case, I'll be prepared. And...
she walks out.
Was that necessary?
I was taught it's best to speak honestly.
Okay. You're a bitch.
Betty looks mildly annoyed. Later, she's at her typewriter.
We recently learned that Amanda Armstrong, our school nurse, has been distributing contraception to Wellesley girls. This revelation is disturbing to an institution that prides itself on propriety.
A large group of girls dressed in black cloaks and hats are racing across the college grounds, rolling wooden hoops in front of them. The winner crosses the line.
It gets me every time.
Why the buggies?
They've got their man. They're wishing for their babies.
She has a floral wreath placed on her head.
Have you seen this?
What is it?
It's a front page attack on Amanda Armstrong. Betty Warren wrote it.
The college news has a story titled Contraception Now Available on Campus.
Providing contraception on demand, our school nurse is little more than a cheerleader for promiscuity.
Wow.
Oh, they're not going to dump her in the lake! Oh! 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 I'm coming, Phyllis!
Have you seen this?
Oh, I wouldn't worry. Betty's just a young girl flexing her muscles.
So was Lizzie Borden, and her mother wasn't president of the Alumni Association.
Would somebody please get that girl a towel?
That's her mother.
Apple tree.
Is Amanda going to get into trouble? Amanda needs to start minding her P's and Q's.
The trick to surviving Wellesley is never getting noticed. Ciao, Mona Lisa.
The big war hero. He thinks he's something special. He sleeps with the students.
An opulent drawing room.
The gold is fine. The napkin rings are vulgar. The glassware should be trimmed with gold. A little white sugar boxes, gold and white, filled with chocolate. No candlesticks. Freesia instead of daisies.
Wise choice, ma'am.
No baby's breath.
Betty and Joan walk in.
You already had your fitting?
We're on our way. Here's the seating chart and Spencer's list of groomsmen. Oh, I almost forgot. I spoke to him about reading a poem, and he'd rather not, so I said all right.
Excuse us for a second, Joan.
She aggressively leads Betty away.
A good wife lets her husband think that everything's his idea, even when it's not.
But I don't care if he reads it.
You will in retrospect. Now... why don't you see if you can't nudge the idea into his head?
Hmm? I've been here now for 21 years, Jocelyn.
I can remember you as a student.
24, if you count that. So why the theatrics?
We cannot appear to promote sexual promiscuity.
Oh, okay. It's about appearances, then.
No.
All right, all right.
All right, well, I promise not to appear to be sympathetic, progressive, or what did Mrs. Warren call it?
Liberal.
Scott's honor.
I spent the better part of Friday afternoon trying to convince the alumni that your record was impeccable, that you would no longer provide contraceptive devices, and that you'd be willing to make a public statement to that effect.
No, I'm not willing to make a public statement.
It doesn't matter, Amanda.
Jocelyn signs a document.
They're letting you go.
Amanda's stunned.
It's out of my hands.
Up, you're good, and down, and this champagne cup is in the wrong place, and up, and down, and up, and... Catherine? Good evening, Miss Watson.
Good evening, Miss Watson.
Join us.
Oh, no.
Good night, Miss Watson.
Good night, Miss Watson.
And down. Very nice, very nice.
Well, I love you. We'll be my baby.
Catherine is riding down the road on her bike when she stops and goes into a bar where the Italian teacher, Dunbar, is sitting and drinking on his own.
Hey.
Heard about Amanda. I'm sorry.
She seemed all right about it. I wouldn't be. Don't give you too many chances around here.
Oh, that depends how much they hate you to begin with. Can I buy you a drink? Or are you here for dinner?
How long do the marriage lectures take?
Get this woman a booth.
Back at the house, where Nance is giving the marriage lesson...
Your husband is at a crossroads in his career. He's competing for promotion against two rivals, Smith and Jones. To get the edge, you have wisely decided to invite the boss and his wife to a 7 o'clock dinner. You've carefully planned your meal, set your table, and arranged for a babysitter. Oh, we have babies.
Yes, and I have twins.
Then surprise, it's 6:15, and your husband's called to say that Smith, Jones, and their wives have been invited at the boss's request. Ever the Wellesley girl, you keep your cool and understand that the boss is probably testing you as much as your husband. What next? Yes.
File for divorce?
That's very funny. But the thing is, it's not a joke. A few years from now, your sole responsibility will be taking care of your husband and children. You may all be here for an easy A, but the grade that matters the most is the one he gives you, not me.
You'll need to...
Whatever you do,
reset your tables.
Don't put the boss's wife next to your husband.
Why not?
She's screwing it.
At the bar.
Is that where you learned to speak Italian? In Italy?
Yeah. You got a boyfriend?
Yes.
You know, if you were mine, I'd never let you go.
I wouldn't have asked your permission.
Yeah, they say you're progressive. Forward thinker. Are you?
There are a lot of labels here, I've noticed. Right family, right school, right art, right way of thinking.
Well, saves the effort on thinking for yourself.
How do you expect to ever make a difference if everything is a joke?
Oh, Catherine Watson comes to Wellesley to set us all free. Come on.
Thank you for the drink.
No, I was teasing. Look, they have their own way of doing things here. You just gotta find a way to work with them. We all had to.
Amanda's in her bedroom, packing her things up, when Catherine walks in and sees her.
I'm sorry.
5 years ago, they'd have slapped my wrist. Now, there's a committee for the protection of everything.
They think you're dangerous?
Oh, no, darling. No, subversive.
It's gotten to the point where you don't know who is protecting whom from what. Or should that be from whom? Well, whom gives a damn anyway? They're doing me a favor, really.
Will you be all right?
Oh, better than that. I should really have left when Josephine died. Nothing left to love here anymore, so.
Different views of the college campus and its grounds, bathed in sunlight. Jones walking through a large room with polished wooden floors and stained glass partitions.
Hello? Miss Watson?
Yes, I'm back here.
I've never been to this part of campus before. Where are we?
No man's land, so to speak.
It's full of art and prints.
Come on in.
What's all this?
Different things, different days. People who inspire me, artists I admire, editorials I don't. So you came to see me.
You gave me a C.
I'm kind.
The assignment was to write about Bruegel. That's what I did.
No, what you did was to copy Strauss.
I was referencing an expert.
If I wanted to know what he thought, I'd buy his book.
Miss Watson, with all due respect,
Bruegel was a storyteller. Find the stories, break them down into smaller pieces. You might actually enjoy it.
You're giving me another chance?
So it seems.
Is that my file? What's it say?
Well, let's see. Straight A's.
Until now.
President of the Poetry Society, captain of the debate team, co-captain of the tennis club, founder of the Horticulture League.
I sound like a pompous ass.
Yes, you do, but a very busy one. It says here that you're pre-law. What law school are you going to go to?
I hadn't really thought about that. I mean, after I graduate, I plan on getting married.
And then?
And then I'll be married.
You can do both. Just for fun, if you could go to any law school in the country, which would it be?
Yale. They keep 5 slots open for women, 1 unofficially for a Wellesley girl.
But you haven't really thought about it.
Jones smiles and shakes her head. Nighttime, and Betty's walking quickly down the corridor, an air of excitement about her. She goes into Jones' room, sits down on her bed, and tries to wake her.
Okay, don't get up. Don't hear what I have to say about Tommy and Spencer looking at an engagement ring. For you.
You're sure?
That's everything we always wanted. We'll be best friends and our husbands will be best friends and we'll have houses together and we'll have babies together and they'll be best friends. You're going to be Mrs. Tommy Donegal.
When?
I'll get the scoop tomorrow. Go back to sleep.
The first part of the exam will consist of 2 pairs of slides. Please identify each of the slides by name, period, and date. Then compare and contrast them. You will have 10 minutes for each pair. Then you will write a 1,500-word essay describing the stylistic differences between Raphael and Van Eyck. Eyes forward, Miss Delacourt. You have 40 minutes. Good luck.
Catherine has put an application form for Yale on Joan's desk. She looks up at her in stunned disbelief, then quickly hides it under her exam paper. Lots of people and a few members of the press have gathered outside church for a wedding. Inside, people are walking down the aisle and taking their seats. A woman ushers a small group of children towards the pew. Dunbar arrives on his own and sits down next to Catherine. Everyone's chatting and looking around.
This is quite the event. I'm surprised I was invited.
Look around you. Who wasn't? Did you ever hear the expression, keeping up with the Joneses?
Of course.
Mr. and Mrs. Gordon Jones, the actual historical family they invented the phrase about.
Good to know.
Giselle walks in, and as she passes Dunbar, she runs her finger along his arm. He quickly moves it, but Catherine notices and stares hard at him. He looks at her, then away, but her stare is so intense he has to look back again. She turns as the bridesmaids gather at the end of the church. Joan's there and excitedly points at a man and mouths, "That's him." Everyone turns as they walk down the aisle in turquoise dresses. Then Betty comes, escorted by her father, and everyone stands. They reach the altar, and Betty's mother smiles proudly as the father shakes hands with the groom. At the party, guests are dancing while the newlyweds welcome other arrivals.
Thank you.
Good to see you.
Thank you very much.
Hi. We're so glad you're here.
Oh, we're together, table 19.
God.
God. The governor is right behind you. Don't turn around. Great band.
At the table.
Violet?
Yes.
Sorry, would you mind if I go here?
Not at all.
Come here. Thank you.
He sits next to Catherine.
Great band.
Great band. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Professor Dunbar.
Hi.
I'm getting a Manhattan. Would you like anything?
No, thank you.
I'll take a Jack and Ginger.
He's making his move. I knew you'd go for her. She's too old for him. She's too smart for him. All that.
Giselle takes her jacket off as the singer starts.
Mona Lisa, Mona Lisa, men have named you. You're so
they're playing our song.
What?
They're playing our song.
I heard you. Hi. Is it not yourself? Because you're
lonely. They Hi. Have blamed
you. Lady's choice?
Sure. For that
morning, Dunbar and Giselle dance together. The wedding party is having its photo taken.
Ladies, gentlemen, quiet!
What was this about the poem you wanted me to read, or...?
It was your idea, don't you remember?
I never said that.
Ready? Excellent.
Well, I wrote this down, just in case you forgot. It's my favorite.
Smile.
Now, Betty, I tried to think of a million ways to tell you how I feel.
But instead, I refer to your favorite poem.
Betty's mom smiles proudly as the bride and groom kiss. Men play football in the corridor.
He's a morsel.
Miss Watson!
He's a favor. Remember? Come on.
Miss Watson, Miss Watson, I want you to meet Tommy.
Oh, yes.
Tommy, come here for a second.
God, you are so beautiful.
This is Catherine Watson.
Oh, wow, in the flesh. You know, she has not shut up about you.
Oh, stop.
Well, she knows what I'm, you know what I'm saying.
I do.
You did something to impress her.
Well, it seems you did, too.
Nancy's drinking alone at the bar.
You make these especially well.
Thank you.
I had a fella, Lenny. You remind me of him so much. He had this funny little thing where his two front teeth overlapped.
he did. Sounds specific.
Everyone's dancing and having a good time, even Catherine and Dunbar. Connie has a partner too.
My parents say my future is right on the horizon.
Tell them that the horizon is an imaginary line that recedes as you approach it. I had a really nice time. Thank you.
Connie. Is this the brush off?
No. I thought you were, you know, done with me.
Why would you think that?
That he said that you... I don't want to take advantage. I know that this was some favor.
She did me the favor, not you.
Connie becomes tense as they dance slowly together, her head by his shoulder, her eyes peeking up at him occasionally.
See the marketplace in old Algiers.
Then she smiles to herself. Giselle's dancing with Dunbar when she sees Catherine walk through the room.
She's too good for you.
Maybe you're right.
I'm too good for you, too. But I have lower expectations.
I thought we settled this last spring, Giselle.
So then we probably shouldn't have slept together over the summer.
Catherine finds Nancy.
You ready?
Do you want to know something funny? Lenny's not dead. Not technically. He's got married. He's got a wife and kids and a mortgage.
It was all supposed to be mine except for the wife.
And you don't look a thing like it.
You ugly bartender.
Stop it, Nancy. You couldn't shine his shoes.
It wasn't supposed to turn out like this. Which way?
Let me just see here. I'm not sure.
I think it's here. Let's come this way. We're almost there.
The girls go nervously into a large cavernous warehouse with a few pieces of art and some delivery crates scattered about. Catherine steps forward.
Joe. Hello.
How are you?
Great. Thank you so much for this. You're a pal.
It's a pleasure. Your timing is perfect. There it is.
The front of a large upright delivery crate falls to the floor to reveal a painting inside. It's a big square canvas of white, black and pink merging to grey, as if the different paints have been flicked on or painted with extravagant flair. Catherine walks right up to it in complete awe, taking in all of its textures and colours.
That's Jackson Pollock.
In a word.
I was just getting used to the idea of dead maggoty meat being our canvas.
Please don't tell me we have to write a paper about it.
Do me a favour. Do yourselves a favour. Stop talking and look. You're not required to write a paper. You're not even required to like it. You are required to consider it. It's your only assignment today. When you're done, you may leave.
Thank God Betty isn't here.
Smiling, Connie approaches the painting with the other girls, and they all study it with a sense of concentration and appreciation, close-ups revealing its intricate layers and depths. Connie's playing the cello. She's in a large, softly lit room with wide, tall windows. a man who's silhouetted against the light outside walks around its edge. She looks up, surprised.
Where did you come from?
Mars.
What a coincidence.
Tom Donegal came by to see Joan, so I hopped a ride.
Why?
So I could do this.
He bends down and kisses her. Snow is on the ground.
Catherine?
Yes?
Have you got a minute?
Of course.
Walk with me. You going home for the holidays?
No.
Too far?
Too expensive. But I've never had a New England Christmas, so.
And our weather hasn't scared you away.
Oh, I love it here.
Do you? I've been getting some calls about your teaching methods, Catherine. They're a little unorthodox for Wellesley. We're traditionalists, Catherine.
Yes, I noticed.
So, if you'd like to stay here...
Is that a question?
More a discussion.
About my staying here?
Well, you'll have your formal review in May. Until then, a little less modern art. Hmm? Happy holidays.
And to you.
Jocelyn leaves Catherine looking shaken. Outside... Catherine slips on the snow-covered steps. All the students are leaving campus for the holidays. A sable under the tree for me. Then an awful good girl, Santa baby. At Betty and Spencer's house.
Hurry down the chimney tonight. So, what's the big hush-hush secret? Are we going to hear the pitter-patter of little Spencers?
Oh, Tommy, stop. They'll tell us when they're ready. Are you ready?
What? Is she the cutest? You are the cutest. I'll come near you.
Betty looks unhappy as they kiss.
No, it's Spencer's been made junior partner.
Oh! Well, it is about time.
And it's a significant raise, too.
Betty.
What? I can say that, can I? To Tommy and Joan? Well, it is. So maybe our family isn't far behind. Let's take our coffee in the sitting room, shall we?
I'll help.
In the kitchen.
Keep them closed.
All right.
She reveals a washer and dryer. Oh,
beautiful. You've got everything you've ever dreamed of.
You will too.
I've got a secret to tell you. You swear you won't gab to anyone. I got accepted early to Yale Law School.
To what? Why? You don't want to be a lawyer?
Shh. Maybe I do.
You won't switch brands of cold cream without asking me, but you applied to law school?
On a lark. We never thought I'd get in.
Who's we?
Miss Watson. She practically filled out my application for me.
Oh, you've got to be kidding me. What right does she have? You're getting married.
First of all, there's no ring on this finger. Second, I can do both. I can.
How does Tommy feel about this?
He doesn't know. No one does.
Not even her?
No one.
Joni! Betty!
You are this close to getting everything you ever wanted, and this close to losing it.
Betty walks out with the coffee, leaving Joan to carry the cake into the sitting room. Spencer's putting his coat and scarf on.
I just got a call. They need me in New York tomorrow.
Joan and Tommy are here. Can't you leave in the morning?
Then I'd miss the meeting. Sorry, you guys. We take a rain check?
Sure, buddy.
We'll see you after the new year. Happy and merry.
He turns to leave, then turns back to Betty.
I'll call you in the morning.
He kisses her hard and not affectionately on the forehead. Joan and Tommy look at each other questioningly, then at Betty, who's upset, but pulls herself together.
Coffee?
Catherine's in her room, doing a painting by numbers.
Guess who has an early Christmas present? Hmm. Oh, my. How can you live like this?
Like
What?
We'll just wait for you to tidy up a bit.
This lifetime will never happen.
Oh, come here, beautiful.
She hugs her boyfriend.
What are you doing here?
Do you still like it here?
I do. I like getting to know the girls most of the time. And the weather.
Yeah, the weather's nice.
Are you breathing? Yeah. I think your lips are a little blue.
Yeah, I like them that way.
Why didn't you bring a coat?
Giselle standing in a doorway, waiting, when a small sports car drives round the corner. She steps out to look, but moves back into the shadows as it drives past. Then it pulls up, and Giselle walks purposefully over to it as Dunbar gets out.
Belle!
Giselle, what are you doing here?
Freezing.
He goes up to her.
Giselle, it's over. I can't see you anymore. I can't.
I know.
Really?
I just want to talk to you for a minute. Come on.
Catherine and her boyfriend are at a table in a busy bar.
I missed you. You're beautiful. Mm. Life without you just isn't life. Then I don't want to go through life not living. Do you?
No.
I love you so much, I would move to this elitist icebox if you want me to.
He puts a ring on her wedding finger.
Make an honest man out of her.
Miss Watson? Hi. I didn't know you were here. Hi. Oh, Giselle, Levy, Bill Dunbar. This is my
fiance. As of about a minute and a half ago, Paul Moore. Nice to meet you.
God, congratulations. It's your fiance. You must be thrilled.
I don't think she's caught her breath yet.
I haven't.
Well, come on, sit down. We'll have a toast.
We'd love to. We're in a hurry. We better run. But that's great. That's really great. Congratulations, old man.
Yeah, congratulations.
Come on, Giselle.
Merry Christmas. Best of tidings to you both. Bye.
After they've gone, Catherine drinks, and Paul looks at her, unaware of her discomfort. A taxi pulls off, and Paul and Catherine run up the steps to her house. Inside, she takes her gloves off, and Paul heads upstairs.
No, Paul. Nancy, I have a heart attack. She has these rules.
Come on.
No.
Why?
I said no. I'm not comfortable. Make up the convertible sofa.
He looks surprised and follows her into the sitting room.
What are you doing? You're not kidding? I just came 3,000 miles to see you. And I'm sleeping down here by myself?
Catherine's taking the cushions off the sofa.
Stop. Stop for a second. Just tell me what the hell's going on.
I don't know. I just feel like everything is getting away from me. We have not seen each other. We haven't actually literally looked at each other for 3 months. And now you're here and I have this ring on my finger.
Which makes you uncomfortable too?
The last time I checked, we weren't on this track.
When was the last time you checked?
She sits down and Paul sits in the opposite chair. Looking at her. Catherine turns away, resting her chin in her hand. Then Paul goes to stand up.
Bill.
Your name is Paul.
I'm not saying no to you.
You're not saying anything. You never really
He gets up and walks to the front door, leaving Catherine sitting on her own. Next day.
If you need me for anything else, my number's on the refrigerator. I feel so guilty leaving you alone after you.
I'm fine. I have lots of research to do.
That's right. Throw yourself into work.
Oh.
I'll be back on the 2nd. See you next year. 1954!
Nancy drives off in a cab, and Catherine's smile fades as she heads back into the house. At the school library, Catherine's reading from a large book when she looks up and sees Dunbar walk in. She turns her back, then moves out of view. Back in class, she holds up a painting in a book.
Sunflowers, Vincent van Gogh, 1888.
He painted what he felt, not what he saw. People didn't understand. To them, it seemed childlike and crude. It took years for them to recognize his actual technique, to see the way his brushstrokes seemed to make the night sky move. Yet, he never sold a painting in his lifetime. This is his self-portrait. There's no camouflage, no romance, honesty. Now, 60 years later, where is he?
Famous.
So famous, in fact, that everybody has a reproduction. There are postcards.
We have the calendar.
There you go. With the ability to reproduce art, it is available to the masses. No one needs to own a Van Gogh original.
We do, in the Newport House. But it's small. Tiny.
They can paint their own. Van Gogh in a box, ladies, the newest form of mass distributed art. Paint by numbers.
Now everyone can be Van Gogh. It's so easy. Just follow the simple instructions and in minutes you're on your way to being an artist.
Van Gogh by numbers?
Ironic, isn't it? Look at what we have done to the man who refused to conform his ideals to popular taste, who refused to compromise his integrity. We have put him in a tiny box and asked you to copy him. So the choice is yours, ladies. You can conform to what other people expect. Or you can...
I know. Be ourselves.
You're a sight for sore eyes.
I would have been here sooner, but silly me, I thought class was held in the classroom.
Glad you could join us, Mrs. Jones. We thought we'd lost you.
There's sort of this unwritten rule
Don't
here for
bother.
The Mary girls.
Since your wedding, you've missed 6 classes of paper and your midterm.
Well, thank God I didn't miss the paint by numbers lecture. I was on my honeymoon, and then I had to set up house. What does she expect?
Attendance.
Most of the faculty turn their heads when the married students miss a class or two.
Well, then why not get married as freshmen? That way, you could graduate without actually ever stepping foot on campus.
Don't disregard our traditions just because you're subversive.
Don't disrespect this class just because you're married.
Don't disrespect me just because you're not.
Come to class, do the work, or I'll fail you.
If you fail me, there will be consequences.
Are you threatening me?
I'm educating you.
That's my job.
Catherine walks away, and Betty glares at her while the other girls sit nervously. Outside, the students are tobogganing down a snow-covered hill. One figure stands alone at the top, watching them, then turns and walks away. Catherine's sitting at the counter in a cafe with a hot drink and reading a book. Then, outside college again.
Miss Watson!
Joan hands her a letter.
What's this?
Every year, the ARs nominate a member of the faculty to be our guest.
The what?
You'll see. Come by tonight at 5:00.
Joan and Catherine run upstairs.
Madame Thribs, Bearer Secret Society. Wait here.
Connie opens the door and goes up to them.
First, the oath. Please raise both hands. Do you swear not to repeat what you see, hear, or smell tonight?
Smell?
Please keep your hands up. Yes, smell.
I do.
They lead her inside, their hands over her eyes. A group of girls are standing around a table at the far end of the room, wearing party hats and banging drums. Giselle goes up to Catherine with a golden goblet.
It'll only burn for a second.
Oh. Go on.
She drinks from it.
And now that you've taken the oath, we get to ask you whatever we want.
Oh, is that how it works?
And you have to answer.
Who invited her?
You're just in time for the truth or consequences.
I go first. Why aren't you married? Oh. Wow. Well, it's poisonous. I'm not married because I'm not. I was engaged to Patrick Watts. Everybody called him Leo, and I never knew why. He was the first person that I ever danced with, or smoked with, got incredibly drunk with, and, well, a lot of first. We were 18 and getting married Christmas of 41. Then Pearl Harbor happened and everything changed. Everybody changed. And by June, he was sent overseas. Did he come back? Yes.
Was he changed?
They both were. I'm sorry.
Your parents?
Yeah. After the war, they didn't know each other anymore. They don't like each other. He left, he got a whole new family.
Divorce.
What?
Yeah. First on my block, that's a city block. People change, things happen. It's same with me and Leo. He went off and married someone else, and I got to go to graduate school.
UCLA, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is in Hollywood.
It's close.
Anyway, aren't you gonna tell everybody about, you know, your big news?
What are you talking about?
She got engaged over Christmas! Oh, I'm sorry to laugh, but it was so romantic.
How fantastic!
Miss Burnett.
What?
We split up. Well, that was fast. Well, not every relationship is meant for marriage.
Some are strictly affairs.
Bill Dunbar, he'd be an affair. Let's talk about that, Miss Watson. You don't believe in withholding, do you?
No. I do, however, believe in good manners. But for you, I'll make an exception. That's what we're supposed to do for married students, right, Betty? Professor Dunbar and I are not having an affair.
Did you have one with William Holden?
Connie!
She asked about Bill Dunbar.
How did you hear that?
Oh, it is true! Oh, Betty, I told you!
Won't you regret never marrying?
Well, there's still time. Well, I guess I assume that I will at some point. I'm just not going to plan my life around it.
And neither should we.
I didn't say that.
Well, you did to Joan. At least that's what she told me.
What are you saying?
She knew you and Tommy were seconds away from engagement, and still she practically filled out your law school application.
I didn't say that.
She's been accepted.
Betty!
Now she just has to figure out a way to tell Tommy.
Why don't you do it, Betty? You seem so good at butting into other people's business.
Funny. That's what they say about you.
Spencer, do I look all right?
Yeah, fine. I don't have a lot of time here. Can we speed things up?
So cool, ouchie. All right, here we go again.
All right, go ahead, Louise.
Wellesley girls who are married have become quite adept at balancing their obligations. One hears such comments as, I'm able to baste the chicken with one hand and outline the paper with the other. While our mothers were called to the workforce for Lady Liberty, It is our duty, nay, obligation, to reclaim our place in the home, bearing the children that will carry our traditions into the future. One must pause to consider why Miss Catherine Watson, instructor in the art history department, has decided to declare war on the holy sacrament of marriage. Her subversive and political teachings encourage our Wellesley girls to reject the roles they were born to fill.
Catherine walks into the lecture hall where the students have been reading Betty's article in the college newspaper. They all look quite uncomfortable, except for Betty, who looks quietly smug. Catherine stands in front of the screen, and one of the students stands up to take her box of slides and carry them up to the projector. Everyone waits with a sense of anticipation. Then Connie stands up and switches off the lights. She hurries back to her seat.
Slide. Contemporary art.
No, that's just an advertisement.
Quiet. Today you just listen. What will the future scholars see when they study us? A portrait of women today?
An advert of a housewife.
There you are, ladies. The perfect likeness of a Wellesley graduate, magna cum laude, doing exactly what she was trained to do. Slide. A Rhodes Scholar. I wonder if she recites Chaucer while she presses her husband's shirt's slide. Now you physics majors can calculate the mass and volume of every meatloaf you make. Slide. A girdle to set you free. What does that mean?
Betty looks down at her lap.
What does that mean? What does it mean? I give up. You win. The smartest women in the country. I didn't realize that by demanding excellence, I would be challenging. What did it say? What did it say? The roles you were born to fill. Is that right?
They all look round at Betty.
The roles you were born to fill?
Some of the girls look uncomfortable, others a little upset or thoughtful. Catherine heads for the door.
Class dismissed.
Giselle puts her head in her hand while Betty looks round at the room, unsure. In Jocelyn's office.
These girls, are you proud, President Carr?
Well, yes, actually I am.
You should be, I guess. Half of them are already married, and the other half, oh, just give it a month or so. I mean, it's really only a matter of time. That's what they're doing here, right? They're just biding their time until somebody proposes.
100 years ago, it was inconceivable for a woman to be a college graduate. I think perhaps you should look back to see how far we've come.
Well, I'm sorry, but from where I sit, it's just a different kind of corset.
Oh, we can all use a little support.
Oh, like the kind you gave Amanda Armstrong?
She broke the law.
According to Betty Warren.
According to the state of Massachusetts.
Catherine storms into Dunbar's classroom.
To hell with Wellesley, I'm done.
The students look up.
God damn it!
Momento,
Catherine. It's brilliant, really, when you think about it. A perfect ruse, a finishing school disguised as a college. Well, they got me.
What do you expect?
More. I thought that I was headed to a place that would turn out tomorrow's leaders, not their wives.
No, I will not!
I got 10 more minutes here. Meet me in my office.
No, I
said meet me.
Catherine's sitting on the desk in Dunbar's office, looking down thoughtfully when he arrives. He watches her as he walks in.
How are you feeling?
Stupid. Deceived. Really, really angry.
Look, change takes time, you know? You gotta let them catch up with you. Catherine, this place needs you. I don't know how the hell they let you in the first place, but I'm sure glad they did.
Oh, the things I said to President Carr. She'll never let me back in.
Yeah, she's a pretty good egg. What things? Don't worry. Time will heal it. Unless, of course, you want to go back to California and that fiancé of yours.
We're not engaged.
Thanks.
Sorry I interrupted your class.
She leaves. Then she's walking along an arched passageway by the college.
Catherine!
Dunbar carries a gift.
I wanted to give you this. It was for Christmas, and, then I met your man, so I...
She opens it, smiling. It's a picture-viewing toy, which he takes out and holds up to the light to look through.
The Sistine Chapel. David. Venus de Milo. And Mona Lisa.
Thank you.
Dunbar inclines his head, then hesitantly leans forward and kisses her. In a bar.
Oh, you didn't even try. This game is probably a no-no in the Better Homes and Gardens. Not that I've ever been in the Better Homes and Gardens, have you?
No. No, I'm just an old soldier. They don't invite us.
What do they say about them, though? Well,
old soldiers never die. We just
become philandering Italian professors.
That was below the belt.
That was unkind. I apologize.
Deeply unkind.
A house in the twilight of dawn, the windows lit up invitingly. Catherine comes downstairs, doing up her dress and smiling at Dunbar, who's half naked by the fire.
You know, I don't know how I feel about being a rebound.
I'll leave.
No, you don't have to do that. I'll get used to it. What are you doing?
Getting dressed. I had fun, and I'm not looking for anything serious.
Well, why don't you come back down here and we can discuss it?
But as long as we're doing whatever it is that we're doing...
Which we did pretty well, don't you think?
No students. I'm serious. I don't want to teach a class wondering why the girl in the third row is wearing my perfume.
Catherine,
I need your word.
All right, you have my word.
Okay.
Now, can we change the subject? Talk about something a little more interesting, like breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I make a mean blueberry pancake.
Just put that shoe on. I think I know you well enough for breakfast.
I don't know about that. So, how does a guy get to know you better then?
Well, let me... That's a good idea.
Bella Caterina.
Is that a battle wound you have?
A scar on his shoulder.
Sucker for war stories and romance languages.
Oh, that's pretty easy.
Yeah.
Si, ero in un paese.
I was in a village called San Remo.
I tedeschi ci avevano.
The crowds pounded us hard, me and Stan. You remember Stan? We were the only two left from our platoon. We heard a distant cry coming from an abandoned shed. When night fell,
appena si è fatto buio.
Una trappola era.
A trap it was.
Una trappola era, Barbara, una trappola era.
Remember.
Dunbar starts writing on the board. Next, Connie and her boyfriend Charlie are on the beach, playing and laughing. They go into the sea and kick water at each other. Then he chases her out. They kiss, then run up to the cafe by the beach.
Hungry?
Famished. Please don't say we can live on love. That's how I miss breakfast.
He suddenly ducks down behind her.
What's the matter?
Ha.
What's the matter?
Philip and Vanessa McIntyre. Parents of a friend.
Oh, you want to say quick hello?
No, no, I'll be trapped. Damn it!
No.
They go inside.
Could you seat us in the bar?
We're only serving in the front part of the restaurant this afternoon.
Connie goes through, but Charlie hangs back.
Miss Stone, this has been the most romantic weekend I may ever have. Ever. And all that's standing between right now and perfection are the McIntyres over there. Now, you know as well as I that with the competition out there, a girl's gotta be able to move a few mountains every once in a while, and I could use all the help I could get.
Come this way.
She leads Connie back out.
I fixed it. No more McIntyres.
Thank you. Thank you. Let's not talk about this.
Some girls are doing synchronized swimming.
And turn. Don't forget to smile. Arms up. Move together. Faster, Fran. When you surface, smile.
How about we have a girls' luncheon this weekend? Just us. Where's Spencer?
Away.
I'm free.
I'm busy.
What are you doing?
She's dating a psychoanalyst.
Oh, really?
Who's married?
Giselle?
Sorry, it slipped.
Are you in, Connie?
I'll have to check with Charlie.
Who? Charlie Stewart, your cousin?
You're kidding.
Au contraire, mon ami. We spent last weekend at the Cape. Oh, hide away, he knew about.
Operative word, hide. Men take women to the Cape in the winter when they're embarrassed to be seen with them. He's using you.
He's not using you if you want to go. Come here. Don't listen to her.
I love you, and I swear I'm not saying this to hurt you. Charlie's promised to Deb McIntyre. She wears his pin. Giselle, you know it's true.
I don't know anything about a pin.
McIntyre? Are her parents named Philip and Vanessa?
You know them?
From a distance.
Connie runs off and Giselle looks away, downhearted. Then Joan swims off. Outside Catherine's house.
Good morning.
Goodbye.
Good morning.
Okay, wait, no, we have an audience. Don't.
No, I don't. Put me down. No, you're not coming in this house.
Go away. Nancy was watching through a window. Then she and Catherine are sitting at the breakfast table.
How can you date a man like that? What if you're wrong about him? What if I'm not?
Coffee's cold.
Catherine walks out. A sunny day, and the girls are gathered round a maypole. Some are wearing long flowing dresses and dancing round it with ribbons. Others are rowing on a lake. In the evening, they're going up steps with partners dressed for a party. A troop of men are singing on stage.
Why they changed it, I can't say. Just like it better that way. Take me back.
Catherine and Dunbar are there together, being watched by Jocelyn and another man.
ears burning?
I think the feet go first when they set the steak on fire.
What do you say, Edward? Should we have it back next year? It's not wrong with an eye's lad.
Who's to say I want to come back?
What? Leave me here with all these girls?
Connie walks out carrying a tray of glasses, followed by Nancy.
You'd think someone would have noticed the empty drinks.
You are good. You remind me of myself when I was your age.
She stops and her smile fades. Catherine and Dunbar are dancing together. Connie walks up to Giselle, who's swigging from a hip flask.
Cheers.
He's positively vomititious, Giselle.
Don't be so sentimental, Connie.
It was a fling. It's fine. It was nothing.
Giselle walks off. Then Connie becomes horrified when she sees Charlie walk in with a girl. He sees her and she backs away.
Could you excuse me for a second? Connie? Connie! Sorry, Connie!
Charlie, it's been a while.
Yeah. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. You, Deb?
Pardon?
Deb, your girlfriend. With the very large... With the very large teeth. With the very large teeth. Oh, did you think I didn't know?
Connie! Deb and I broke it off last summer. That's Miranda. We started seeing each other around the time that you stopped returning my phone calls or answering any of my letters.
Connie stares at him in disbelief.
Okay, maybe I should go.
He leaves and she's left standing while the girls sing on stage. Next, she's sitting on the steps lighting a cigarette with trembling hands.
Have you seen Spencer?
Connie shakes her head, and Betty sits down beside her.
But I did see Charlie Stewart.
And he told me that he and Deb broke up last summer.
And you told me that they were together when he invited me to the Cape.
Oh, Connie. I don't keep track of his dates. I've been on again, off again for the past few years.
No. Apparently they've been off again for a while. For quite a while.
So?
So you made me believe that he was hiding me. Either way, why couldn't you let me be happy?
Betty looks away, then gets up and leaves. Back in the hall, the dance floor's a blur of action as couples swing together. Spencer, in particular, is throwing a girl around with energetic deftness. A woman walks on stage and signals to the orchestra.
And we switch.
Tommy to Catherine.
Wonder teacher.
Tommy.
They start dancing.
How's Harvard?
Oh, not too bad. Not too bad. Congratulate me.
You set a date.
No, nothing official yet. I meant I got into Penn. Grad school.
Congratulations. What about Yale?
Yale? Oh, you mean Joni? Yeah. How about that, huh? She is some girl.
She's terrific.
Yeah. Just the fact that she got in. I mean, she will always have that. Thanks to you. Miss Watson, you've been real swell to her. We both appreciate it.
I'm sorry, the fact that she got in, what does that mean?
Well, she'll be in Philadelphia. With me. What? Well, that's an awful long commute to get dinner on the table at 5:00.
And we switch.
Thank you.
A woman sings on stage.
Excuse me.
Have you seen Spencer? I can't find him anywhere.
Actually, Spencer asked me to take him home. He has this meeting.
In New York. Thank you.
Betty runs off through the crowd.
What'll I do?
A taxi pulls up in the rain outside a house. A figure in a raincoat and headscarf gets out and runs up the steps to the front door. Inside, Betty's mum comes down the stairs in her dressing gown.
Honey, what are you doing here?
I'm staying the night.
Spencer won't mind?
Spencer won't notice. He's in New York again, working.
He's working hard for both of you.
Don't lie for him, Mother. He does it so well for himself.
You're going to turn around, go home, fix your face, and wait for your husband. This is the bargain you made, Elizabeth. We all did.
So, you're not going to let me stay in my own house?
Spencer's house is your house now. Believe me, that's for your own good.
Catherine gets out of a taxi in an expensive street and runs up to a large house. Joan answers the door.
Miss Watson, come in. 7 law schools within 45 minutes of Philadelphia. You can study and get dinner on the table by 5.
It's too late.
No, some of them accept late admissions. Now, I was upset at first, I can tell
Joan,
you that now.
Sweetheart,
when Tommy came to me at the dance and told me that he got accepted to Penn, I thought, oh God, her fate is sealed. She's worked so hard, how could you throw it away? And then I realized you wouldn't have to. You could bake your cake and eat it too. It's just wonderful.
We're married. We eloped over the weekend. It turned out he was petrified of a big ceremony, so we did a sort of spur-of-the-moment thing. Very romantic. Look.
She holds up her wedding ring.
Oh, hello. What a surprise.
It's beautiful.
Catherine leaves.
It was my choice not to go. He would have supported it.
But you don't have to choose.
No, I have to. I want a home. I want a family. That's not something I'll sacrifice.
No one's asking you to sacrifice that, Joan. I just want you to understand that you can do both.
Do you think I'll wake up one morning and regret not being a lawyer?
Yes, I'm afraid that you will.
Not as much as I regret not having a family, not being there to raise them. I know exactly what I'm doing, and it doesn't make me any less smart. This must seem terrible to you.
I didn't say that. I...
Sure you did. You always do. You stand in class and tell us to look beyond the image, but you don't. To you, a housewife is someone who sold her soul for a center hall colonial. She has no depth, no intellect, no interests. You're the one who said I could do anything I wanted. This is what I want.
Catherine hugs her.
Congratulations. Be happy.
Then she goes. Joan watches her, then heads inside, but turns back to look at her again through the screen door. Nighttime, and people are crowding into a theatre's foyer. Giselle's there with an older man.
Sometimes I think you say these things to provoke me. Does your father know that you speak this way?
They kiss.
Does your wife know you're here?
Giselle smiles and walks away to a window. She pulls off her glove and takes out a cigarette and is about to light it when she looks across the street and sees Dunbar with a young blonde woman. Giselle looks pleased until she sees them kissing passionately. Her face turns to one of surprise and dismay. Then the faintest of smiles flickers over her lips before she becomes thoughtful again. Connie's outside a college.
Where might I find Charlie Stewart?
Charlie Stewart, C-1744, but it's much too late now. You'll have to leave.
All right.
Please. No, gentlemen, I can't. You can't go up there!
What's going on? You can't be in here!
There's no way to allow you in the dorms!
interrupt me. Connie, what are you doing here?
I saw Big Teeth with Kevin Twill this afternoon looking pretty cozy, and I thought that maybe you two weren't.
Dating?
Yes.
I think so.
Thank you.
Hey, you can't have her in. No girls in the door.
Hey! I know I've made mistakes, a ton, but I never make them twice.
Charlie smiles and kisses her, taking her head in his hands, and she puts her arms around his neck. Joan's lying on a bed while Connie plays cello.
And it's perfect. Romantic, we stayed up all night talking.
You're late, what happened to Sunday brunch?
We stayed up all night too, not talking.
The psychoanalyst, again.
Divine exhaustion.
He's married.
He's not married like you and Tommy are married.
What does that mean?
It means he and his wife don't speak the same language.
Spelled S-E-X.
Does he pay you? For sex? I mean, at the rate you're going, you could make a fortune.
Betty.
Everyone thinks so. Do you know what they say? They say you're a whore. Pretty soon, once they've all sampled you, they'll toss you aside like a used rag.
Betty, stop now!
Men you love don't even want you. Your father doesn't want you.
I'm gonna meet you downstairs.
Professor Dunbar?
Betty, that's enough!
Everybody knows that you hide outside his house! It must be torturous running after a man who doesn't even care about you, who's in love with someone else, who hates you. He hates you!
Betty.
And it hurts! Ah, get off of me! Get quiet! Get off!
Giselle takes Betty tightly in her arms. A group of men and women are sat around a table in a room at the college. Someone hands Betty's mother Catherine's folder.
I say no. I mean, it's not fair to her. She's not happy.
Don't forget about her outburst, Jocelyn.
Oh, that's right.
Dr. Staunton, will you tell the alumni the figures you have?
Enrollment for her class next year is the highest the department's had ever.
She would have to promise to turn in her lesson plans.
In advance. And they'll need to be approved. She'll never agree to that.
Catherine rides her bike through some woods, then down a slope to Dunbar's house.
Bill, the brochures for Europe arrived!
She goes into the bathroom, but finds a different man in the shower.
I'm Stanley Scher, an old friend of Bill's. Oh. We were in the 37th together.
Yes, okay.
You must be Catherine.
I am.
Oh, well, he told me you were a looker, but...
I'll wait for you downstairs, Stanley.
Okie dokie.
Stanley's downstairs with her, pouring a drink.
So you and Bill were in the war together?
Yep. Now he's some fancy teacher, and I'm in air conditioning. Forget the A-bomb. Freon is going to change the good old U.S. of A. Open the entire West to development. I base in El Paso.
Oh, thank you.
And cheers.
Oh. Well, you've come a long way from San Remo.
Yes, sirree. That in California?
Italy. Where you two were stationed.
Italy? Oh, somebody's been pulling your long leg. We were stationed at the Army Language Institute on Long Island for the whole schmagegi. Closest we ever got to Italy was the baked ziti at Mamma Leone's. As a matter of fact, I don't think Bill's ever been to Europe. I sure as hell haven't. Cheers.
Catherine looks at him in stunned silence. Later, she's sitting out by the edge of the lake when Dunbar finds her.
Catherine.
You okay?
I met Stan. Hell of a nice guy.
Yeah.
What a talker.
Yeah. We go back a long way.
All the way to Long Island. Secrets out. What an incredible lie.
Look, I spoke the language, I had the uniform. People just assumed things. I didn't correct them. I guess I should have done.
I guess you should have done.
Catherine, look, I'm sorry, okay? I made a mistake. Just give me a chance to straighten things out, okay?
Why couldn't you just be honest?
Make it easy. You're so perfect, you... It's impossible to be honest with you.
For you, it is.
It was not just me, Catherine. Joan failed you too, right?
It's an awful thing to say.
Yeah, I know, but it's the truth. You want honesty? I can be real honest. You didn't come to Wellesley to help people find their way. I think you came to Wellesley to help people find your way.
Dunbar goes to put his arm around Catherine, but she stands up and walks away. He leans back against the tree. Betty is sitting in a reading room at the college when her mother walks in.
Hunting you down. Elizabeth, look at me, please. I've spoken with Mrs. Jones. There will be no divorce. There's always a period of adjustment. I've assured her that you'll try for a year.
Look at this, Mother.
It's a picture of the Mona Lisa.
Spencer will try as well. According to her, he's really very upset. You should call him.
She's smiling. Is she happy?
The important thing is not to tell anyone.
She looks happy. So what does it matter?
Don't wash your dirty laundry in public.
Let me tell you something. Not everything is as it seems.
Betty looks away, then gets up and leaves, while her mother remains seated and controls her composure. Jocelyn sitting at a large table, dictating.
Dear Miss Watson, it is with great pleasure that we invite you to return as an instructor in the art history department for the 1954-1955 academic year. We do wish to make clear, however, that this invitation is absolutely conditional upon the following. Please, Nora, may we continue? Number one, you will teach only the syllabus as outlined by the department chair. Number two, all lesson plans must be submitted at the beginning of every term for approval and revision. Number three, you shall not provide counsel beyond your own subject for any student at any time. And finally, that you will agree to maintain a strictly professional relationship with all members of the faculty.
Evening, Catherine.
Assuming you accept the above conditions, we look forward to your continuing to be a part of our Wellesley tradition.
Catherine gets home to find the remains of a congratulations party held for her.
Nice party. I didn't realize.
It was a surprise.
Howard.
Howard. Howard, yes.
Howard. Oh, it doesn't matter. The important thing is that you'll be back next year. Hopefully living here.
I haven't really thought about that. They just told me today.
Well, there's still plenty of time. You should be celebrating. You're right. Let's celebrate. Let's go upstairs and get gussied up and go out dancing. Silly. It's after 8 o'clock. Strike It Rich is on.
Oh, life isn't about Strike It Rich.
It's a school night.
So what?
So I don't want to go. I'm happy here. It's back on.
Well, do you feel good about music today?
Oh, isn't he handsome?
Oh, I feel...
Watch with me.
You'll try it. You talk me into it, says this popular oldie. What's the title of this one?
You made me love you.
Oh, you made me love you.
You made me love you.
The girls are looking at pictures of the Mona Lisa.
You get all that just from looking at paint on a canvas, and it's just her facial expression, her... what's going on underneath her eyes that makes you think that. I think that makes it valid and interesting.
The context that it comes from affects the way we view it.
I think it provokes us because it provoked the painter, and in turn, he's kind of sending that message to us.
Whether or not it's a good painting cannot be subjective.
Well, I feel like I'm missing something. Exactly, makes it intrigued.
Yeah, I feel like I'm responding.
Catherine's sitting next to Connie, her chin resting on her hand, her face thoughtful with a hint of a smile. Next, she walks out of her office and finds a somewhat different painting-by-numbers version of Van Gogh's Flowers. She turns it over, and on the back is written, "I made one for Uncle Ferdy too. Love, Connie." Catherine looks up and sees the same picture done in wildly varying styles and colours all around the room. The girls walk in, led by Connie, Giselle and Joan, some of them carrying more paintings.
It was Joan's idea.
Catherine smiles broadly at Connie.
How else will you remember us?
She carries on smiling as more students turn up, then turns and walks through them, touching them affectionately, and goes outside. She stands with her hands on her hips, overcome, then rubs her mouth thoughtfully. She looks upwards and runs her hands through her hair. Then the bell's ringing in the church tower, and it's graduation day.
Oh, they've invited you back.
Do you think they made a mistake?
I do.
Betty walks urgently up to Catherine.
Elizabeth, I don't see Spencer.
Excuse me, Mother. Miss Watson, can you help me get in touch with that friend of yours in Greenwich Village?
Oh, what do you need in Greenwich Village? An apartment.
I filed for a divorce this morning. And since we know I'm not welcome at your house.
You remember Giselle Levy? What'd you call her?
New York Kike, that's it. Well, we're going to be roommates.
Hi.
You ready?
Yeah.
Giselle and Betty go up to Catherine, and Giselle hugs her, then leaves the two of them alone.
Greenwich Village.
For a while. Then, who knows? Maybe law school? Yale even?
Well,
I wouldn't want to come up against you in any court anywhere.
Maybe I can drop by next year. Keep you on your toes. You will be here. Miss Watson.
An addressed envelope is added to a pile.
Dear Betty, I came to Wellesley because I wanted to make a difference. But to change for others
is to lie to yourself. My teacher, Catherine Watson, lived by her own definition and would not compromise that, not even for Wellesley. I dedicate this, my last editorial, to an extraordinary woman who lived by example and compelled us all to see the world through new eyes. By the time you read this, she'll be sailing to Europe, where I know she'll find new walls to break down and new ideas to replace them with. Hold it, everybody!
The students have their photograph taken.
I've heard her called a quitter for leaving, an aimless wanderer. But not all who wander are aimless, especially not those who seek truth beyond tradition, beyond definition, beyond the image.
Get the hell out of the way!
Catherine's being driven along with all her students cycling beside her, waving goodbye.
We'll never forget you.
Betty, fighting back tears, cycles by the open window and reaches for her hand. The other students stop and wave, and Catherine wipes a tear away, smiling.
Well, this job belongs to some soldier. And when he comes back, he can have it.
Oh, that's swell.
In the heart of every girl, there's a woman waking up. Like sunlight spreads across the world. A smile for us is just enough. But in the heart of every girl, there's a homespun family dream. A light that's filled with so much joy, from a curly head cutie to a teenage queen. And honeymoons and summer through, we'll always love a bride. The gift you give us all is the one you hold inside. This lucky life, this crazy mixed up world, in the heart of every girl. In the heart of every girl, there's always room for Valentines and boys to kneel and take their hands with words as sweet as summer wine. And in the heart of every girl, there is a rose for every spring, a peach that's fragrant and divine. She shines just like a wedding ring. And honeymoons in summer prove we'll always love a bride. The gift you give us all